Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hey, Road Trippin' fam, we are excited to let you know that Road Trippin' is proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played NBA Daily Fantasy on FanDuel before? Well, check this out. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Why should you play on FanDuel NBA? Well, for one, it is easy to use when it comes to their app. What's not to love about that? But also, for example, they offer different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level. Oh yeah, and get this, you can play for big prizes, single game contests for the biggest national matches, and enter contests for as low as 5 cents. That's right, 5 cents. Simply incredible. So again, let's recap. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Enter URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin to play now and get your deposit bonus. That's URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win.
Whoops, I can't hear him.
Yeah, I can't hear him either.
You got to unplug your mic and then plug it back in.
How many times does Channing say that every episode?
You know, it's a running joke now.
Jerry, remember when I told you that I log on early just to make sure all the mic and the video and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. It's for these guys.
Oh, it's for us. It's for the dumb ones in this group.
Yeah, no. Hey, how are you?
What? Can't hear you. It has to be your AirPods. Jerry, you may be 77, Jerry, but at least we can hear you. We can see you. You've got this thing figured out.
Yeah, I think he's on mute.
Yeah, you are on mute, Rich.
At the bottom of the screen.
There we go. There can you hear go. Me now? Can you hear me now? Now-
Yay.
Yes.
Cheers. Cheers. Welcome into this edition of Road Trippin' presented by FanDuel. I'm your host, Alec Clifton, alongside Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye. Our guest this week is used to being on this side of the mic, has more experience than the three of us combined, and that's a compliment when it comes to this space. He is a cultural and civic icon. He wears many hats, and we have all the stories to dive into with him now. His name is Jerry Springer, and we welcome him.
Yes. Yes.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jerry, I will say, when it was a possibility or it was being thrown around to have you as a guest, none of us thought that was real. And then when we found out that you would like to join us, Richard, his response was, "This is a dream come true."
Oh man, you can get help, Richard.
No, you know what it is for many years I thought I was going to be able to come on your show and get quality help that I needed, but it just I would watch the show growing up, I just was like, see, those are my people. Those people get it. Yep. Those people understand. So this is so much fun. Like whenever
I never knew that one of them would become president. No, I'll stay away from that.
No, you're fine.
Okay. We can edit it afterwards. We'll edit it.
No, that's fine. Hey, look. That's just it. Look, Jerry Springer shooting shots.
Yeah.
I have this question though. Of all your episodes, right?
Yeah.
Which one? Okay, because I have the one episode where I think you had the Klansman that was there who got the chair thrown at him.
Yeah.
That was to me the episode of episodes, right? That was like pure WWE.
That was our first fight.
Oh.
It was early on, and it broke out into a fight with people in the audience. And we did not have security, because who ever heard of having security on a talk show, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then literally a riot broke out. And for 15 minutes, it was uncontrollable.
Oh.
And every one of us thought that's the end of the show. I mean, we'll be off the network, period. Because back then, to fight on television, and they were really hurting each other.
Yeah.
The next day, we hired security, and Steve, who now has his own show, Steve Wilkos, he was hired the next day and brought a bunch of his buddies with him, and that became our security. So that really was the first fight. I remember that show as well. Yeah.
What year was that?
92, probably.
92? Oh,
92 or 93, yeah. We started in 91. It's been 30 years.
Yeah. I was 11 years old when that got started. And I remember when I got to like 14, 15, probably at your guys's, when you guys were really starting to hit that crazy peak. It was like, it was just such a controversial show. It was like, there was parents that didn't want their kids watching the show. And there was Disney.
Yeah.
It was like, wait, guys, you realize this is on in the middle of the day. Like, what kids are home watching this stuff? Like, what? I didn't understand that art. That for me was like, when I first saw that argument about, well, you know, parents and kids, and you're like, well, this isn't for children. They should be at school at noon on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I couldn't even admit to my own family that I was doing the show. They don't know I'm Jerry Springer. I told them I sell insurance.
that didn't last.
They think I'm an insurance salesman. They don't know I'm doing that. That show was awful. Yeah.
Okay, well, we also have to get into your new show that you're currently doing. You just got picked up for a third season in the midst of season two, Judge Jerry. But before we do, because Channing brought that up and it's awesome, we actually take callers for Road Trippin'. And so I remind people, 6575-CALL-RT. You can leave us voicemails, you can send us text messages. And I do have a text message from someone, Mark from Cleveland. He asked you, do you know whatever happened to the man who lived in a box in 2001 that was trying to win the love of his life back? And he actually sent the link and I watched the clip.
Yeah.
Because he said if you didn't convince his wife to take him back, then he was going to become your problem.
Well, apparently his wife took him back because he hasn't been my problem.
There you go, Mark.
You know what? I actually kind of remember that. I honestly don't remember how it turned out, but I do remember we had a guy who lived in a box, and he was doing it in a sense as a protest.
I'll pull it up for you.
Oh, come on, man.
Did you have any idea the cultural impact that you were going to have on this planet for the next 30 years? Because now I feel like, with the internet and with memes and with jokes and with like all of these random videos, like I go back to like your show and like what you guys were doing as one of the first that was kind of like, no, we're going to show you there's a lot of weird people in this country.
The show was put on purely for entertainment. I mean, there was no social purpose to it. It was just an escape, but it turned out to have some social significance, because it really was the first time that up until that time, American television was upper middle class white people. And period, whether it was The Friends or Seinfeld or Frasier, that's what was on television. And then with our show, if you were, for example, a minority, you had to be on one of the side networks. But our show really was, it turned out to be the first show where we saw a different part of America. Just as many people out there that aren't rich, that aren't necessarily white, that aren't necessarily, upper middle class or living in posh apartments or something. And I think people were shocked by that. I don't think anybody saw something on the show, if you're a grown-up, that you didn't know exists in the world. We all knew that. But we had never seen it before on television. If it was television and you were husband and wife, you slept in separate beds. I mean, it was a totally different culture then. Yeah. I remember we had protests outside our studio the first year we did the show, because we did a show on interracial dating.
Yes.
And there were protests.
You remember this, Channing?
Yeah, because I grew up in Arizona. Like, look at me, dog. What's up? Yeah. And not a lot of black girls in Chandler, Arizona. I'll tell you that.
And then 20 years into the show, we have a president who was the product of an interracial marriage. So it's like how the culture has changed. But I think that was the shock effect, what you're referring to. In the early 90s, that was shocking. Now you go on social media, nothing on our show was shocking compared to what's in social media. You know,
well, you help like desensitize people to the world that was coming, right?
I'm so sorry.
Listen, without you, if the internet, what, you know, it's like there's a difference between getting punched when you're ready for it and when you're punched and you're not looking. You prepared us for a punch that we were looking for. We were like, well, we know these crazy people exist, right? Yeah. Like, we've been watching Springer our whole lives.
Yeah. Well, I'll write that on my tombstone. I prepared you for the punches.
Oh, okay.
I won't be right back.
But you won't be, but I will not be right back.
Yeah.
I have a question. Like, you are a cultural icon. You have seen it all. You have done it all. Has there ever, what was the moment? Because I know everyone has it. When Springer was blowing up, you were blowing up, and whether it was a celebrity that came up and was like a crazy fan or something, was there like a really weird moment where you're just like, okay, this is very, very different.
For me, there were three, and I don't know which came first, but there were three things that happened when I started to think this is out of control. You know, this is not what, I wasn't prepared to be well known. That wasn't what my life was about. And it was appearing on the cover of Rolling Stone, being on the Flintstones. Oh, what was the other one? And passing Oprah in the ratings. when we did that, then I started to think, this show is, this show is going someplace.
Were you afraid of the attention that you were not, when I, obviously it's not the attention, but it's like when you pass Oprah, you're like, okay, the more people that are watching this, the substance of our show isn't going to change. But were you ever like a little worried because there were so many people watching?
The honest answer is no. But I think the serious answer to all that thing about suddenly becoming well known, I think age matters. In other words, and this is true in sports or show business or Hollywood, when people get to be famous when they're young, really young, some of people have difficulty putting it in perspective. They believe all the hype. They believe, you know, when wonderful things are said about you, it can go to your head because you don't realize they're loving the actor they see in the movie, but they don't know you personally. They're not in your life. But if you've already lived a life, and by the time I got into show business, I had already lived a life as a politician, as a, you know, a mayor or whatever, and then a news anchor. So I kind of knew what life was about. So when I suddenly became famous because of a silly show, it wasn't like, oh gosh, I must be special. You know, I always knew the show was stupid. It was fun to do, but the show's stupid. And that kind of keeps you, I think that keeps you balanced. And I think that is, you know, when we see these young stars getting in trouble, oftentimes it's because they've spent every penny they've made. They surround themselves with 20 personal guards. They walk around, you know, with a posse. And, you know, that's not a normal life.
Yeah.
You know, my advice would always be keep the friends you had before you were famous.
Yeah.
You know, because they liked you because of who you were, not because of how well known you are, you know.
Yeah. Jerry, that's before
that's my
the...
final thought.
It won't be right
so
back.
So like before, yeah. Before you would do a show, right? Would they prepare you like this is what we're gonna talk about today? Or did you have to go out there with your cue cards? Like, how much was the preparation? And then were you like, guys, I'm not doing this today. Like, I'm not going out there with A, B, C, D. This is going to be pandemonium, right? I'm not telling okay. this man who's the been answer, married to a woman, you know.
Yeah.
The this wants to go marry a horse.
Oh, yeah. That was my favorite show. but the answer may surprise you, but I was never allowed to know what the show was about.
What?
So when you see me carrying a card, all the card had on it were the names of the guests. And my job was to ask questions that you would ask sitting at home watching and then make jokes. So that's why every segment always started with me saying, so what's going on? I'd introduce the person and I'd say, so what's going on? And then the person would start with their story. And I would then have to, you know, move it along, ask questions that you'd be asking and then I have to make jokes about it. That's what they were really paying me for. So. So there's zero preparation in terms of the show. Now, I had to be alert while it was going on. Otherwise, it would just be, you know,
boring.
It could really be boring. So I had to keep it going. But I never knew the subject. If I knew what it was about, I'd never have come in. The show was stupid. I'm not going in there. I could get hurt.
Were the cases real? Not like cases, were the stories real?
Yeah, they had to be. The lawyers were all over it. Now,
what?
I'm sure we did 5,000 shows. And I'm sure in the 5,000 shows, we didn't catch some people who were making something up. But before the show, you would be in the room with the lawyers and the camera on. And you had to testify and sign because otherwise you'd be legally liable. And that scared a bunch of people off. That's how we caught a lot of people that were making up a story because they suddenly saw this is not worth it. But no one came on the show to be famous because we didn't use their real names. So it wasn't that. It's they were fans of the show and they just wanted to get something off their chest and they were legitimately angry. But it was, you know, it was about dating. It was about some guy, you know, slept with my girlfriend. So you're really angry at the time, but the next day at that age, you're dating someone else. So it wasn't life-changing issues. We never were serious. It was always just a circus. But I never knew what was going on. And it made it, in a sense, easier for me, but it made me more alert while it was going on.
Oh, yeah.
So for instance, like I'm a bit of a sarcastic person. And whenever there's a little scuffle during an NBA game, if I'm calling the game, I just start going, Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry. I've heard you do that.
And so and there's some people that get it. There's some people that don't, but it's all I know is that when I start doing that, there are millions of people that are triggered. Like triggered in like a positive memory, like funny story way. Like, does that still kind of like tickle you that all of a sudden just like your name and your name chanting is synonymous with like, you know, fights or like scuffles? I don't want to say fights. I want to say like scuffles.
Yeah.
Well, I
have two
mix-ups.
I have two memories of that. And this was just a couple of years ago. I go to Yankee Stadium. They were playing the Orioles and there was a bench clearing brawl on the Jumbotron. The camera spotted me in the crowd. They put me on the Jumbotron. And while the guys are fighting, the 48,000 people start chanting, Jerry.
God.
That was one time. And the other time, which was my favorite, it was 2004. And I was at the Democratic Convention in Boston. And it was the Sunday night before the first day of the convention. And I was giving a speech to the Young Democrats.
Okay.
And when I finished and went out, across the street was Fenway Park. And this was 2004, and they were playing a night game. They were hosting the Yankees.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, oh. So I go up to the stadium, and it's where the outfield was, and there's a gate there, and the cops there saw me, and I say, are they still selling tickets or whatever? And the guy said, come on in, you know, I'm just, you know, you want to just come on in with me.
Come on in, you shot ahead.
So I walk in with him. Okay, so now he's walking me to a seat down in the first level. And as I'm walking there, people see me and they start going, Jerry, Jerry. Well, in the first row behind the Red Sox dugout is John Kerry, the nominee. He thinks they're chanting Kerry, Kerry. So he stands up and starts waving and they boo him.
Oh.
And then he saw me, and a couple of nights later at the convention,
he understood.
He ripped me about that.
Did he? that is so odd. Like, again, like, that's my favorite thing to do is just like whenever, because no one fights. The NBA fights are very similar to the fights in yours. Like, of all the scuffles, there might be, I don't know, 100 scuffles. There might be one actual punch thrown during an NBA season. It's very, very rare because guys don't want to lose money. So basically, to me, they just remind me of a Jerry Springer fight. That's
yeah, it's wrestling. It's trying to get down on the ground.
Yeah.
He used to hemp people up though. Yeah, the little guest, he used to grab them and just be tucked in like this. He's like, man, calm down.
Okay, so Jerry, I'm sorry. We do have like probably like five or six actual consistent fans that come on here. What the fuck do you have on your face, Channing?
What? These?
No, yeah, I get headaches. The goatee.
I get headaches now because I'm on the screen so long, and I have to do two more podcasts after this, and I have to do Zoom calls for wine.
What do you call those glasses? It's for the
yellow
blue light
UV things. Yeah, they're cheap. They're just so I don't get headaches.
Oh, you don't actually wear glasses?
I have to go get my eyes checked next week. But yeah,
maybe the headaches are coming
worse.
Jerry, that's your official welcome to road tripping moment. Every episode, these two have to have their moment.
We just ignored the fact that like Channing just was wearing some clear glasses for the first time.
They're like $30 and they're great. I don't get headaches.
How many payments do you still have left?
At least three.
Okay.
And Derek's been killing me.
Daddy, you got Jerry Springer talking shit to you. Like, think about that.
I'm so happy.
I need to take tips from Jerry.
I want to get back to something that you said about. Okay, so like you were talking to the Young Democrats, and you were a politician. Like Allie did not know this. She's doing her prep. So we were talking before. And I remember when you had to go testify in front of Congress. I pay attention to a lot of random things, especially growing up. And that's when I saw that. That's when someone was like, oh, or upon like kind of reading whatever it was, they were like, yeah, the politicians didn't know about your background as like a news anchor, your legal history, your background as a politician, which means that they weren't prepared because you kind of came on and let's just say that round went to Jerry, not to Congress.
Oh, are you talking about when I...
Like in the 90s.
Oh, okay. Yes, in the 90s, I was called by the Chicago City Council.
Yeah.
Because we were taping the show in Chicago, and the city council there, the councilman there, they wanted to ban our show, which, of course, is absurd because this is America. Yeah. And a local city council has no authority over free speech.
Yeah.
The FCC could step in and decide something, but you know, you can't have every city council making a decision what show is allowed to be on and what not, particularly when it's nationally televised. So obviously they had no grounds for being on. But anyway, they brought me and they televised the hearings on all the cable networks live. Mm-hmm. And the council was trying to get me to admit that the fights were fake. So, and we were using Chicago cops as the security. So that was their hook. And they want to know if the fights weren't fake, why the Chicago cops weren't arresting these people for assault. So I would either, they wanted to put me in the position of either having to say it was fake and that would destroy the show, or say it's real and then the cops would be fired for not doing their jobs. So they really thought they had me. And I was concerned when I was called up and I saw all those cameras there that this was a hearing that was being covered. So I brought my buddy with me and I said, you sit next to me and you pretend you're my lawyer. And you know, when they're hearings and they always have, you know, when there's testimony, the guy always leans over and whispers to his attorney. So I said, every once in a while, I'm going to lean over and I'm going to go, bah, 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 bah. I'm not going to say anything, but it's going to look real. They then show a video of this incredible fight on our show. And this was the moment. So they say, Mr. Springer, you're under oath, right? Yep. This fight that we just all saw now, is that real or is it fake? And the whole future of my show depends on this. And so what I said was, well, it looks real to me, which of course dodges the question.
It dodges the question.
But of course it's the truth.
Yeah.
In other words, the truth is the fights are real.
Yeah.
But how do I know if these people, when they're on television, are embellishing it? Hey, let's make this a really good one. How do I know what the intent is when he's throwing a punch? There's no way we can know. So.
Yeah.
And so then they dismissed the hearing. That was the hearing I think you're talking about.
Yeah, that was
they tried to cancel the show and on the fact that the fights. But the fights, yeah, if you went to the show and sat in the audience, and we had a lot of NBA players that came to the show to watch it because you guys play at night and the show was at the day. So when you're in Chicago, you're looking for something to do during the day. You came and sat in the audience. So
I kid you not, I had one of my teammates, I don't remember who it was. I think it might have, maybe it was Kerry Kittle or somebody, was like, he got on the bus, like going to the game. And you just, oh, what'd you do? You know, after shooting, I was like, yo, I went to go see like the Springer show. And I'll never forget it because I was so mad that he didn't tell anybody and that he didn't invite anybody else. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh no, one of my buddies works on the show. And so that's how the whole thing got started. But I just remember him going and just, you know, so you're right. Guys used to, you know, the middle of the day, it's either that or Seinfeld reruns.
And with Chicago, you have all the pro teams. So we had the Bulls, we had the Bears, we had the Cubs and the White Sox.
Who did you ever like see in the crowd as an athlete? And we're like, oh, wow.
Oh,
that moment?
They were, I mean, like the entire Bulls team was there. A lot of the visiting players were there. I mean, it was regularly, I'd say, during the season, more often than not, there were some of the ball players or some of the athletes in the crowd. So it wasn't unique. Like the Bulls, where they were all, I mean, Dennis Rodman.
He
could have been a contestant.
Oh, yeah. Ron Harper. And I mean, yeah, they were, all the guys came. That was kind of a normal thing to do in Chicago daytime.
Yeah, but Rich, before you got on here, we were talking to him. He mentioned that he grew up in New York, so he's actually a Knicks fan.
Oh, yes. I'm doing the Knicks game on Sunday. It's going to be great. They hate me. They all hate me. Every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, we can get over it.
Okay. Okay, yeah. We can get over it.
Yeah, well, we'll settle the dispute. No, I grew up in New York, but when I was a kid, I was born in the 40s, but in the 50s, my first autograph of all time was Sweetwater Clifton.
Oh, wow.
And he was the first African-American to play in the NBA. He had been with the Globetrotters. Mm-hmm. And the discrimination was so unbelievable then that here he was 6'8", clearly the best athlete on the team. And he was forced to only take two-hand set shots from the perimeter. They didn't want him dominating under the boards.
Yeah.
And he had these huge hands. When he played for the Globetrotters, his whole thing was, you know, holding the ball in one hand and doing all this kind of stuff. Well, so he was just this great athlete, but he just stood there. They pass the ball and he take two-handed set shots, which just looked, it was not that a set shot is demeaning, but back then it was so clear what his role was.
Well, he wound be up good, but don't be too good. It's like, be good, but don't be too good. You can come here and play. You can do this. But if you go down there and you're too good, then they're probably going to get you out of here, that type of stuff.
Exactly. We don't want to antagonize the fans and all that kind of thing. It was just horrific. He wound up being a cab driver in Chicago. He died a few years ago. I mean, he was in his 60s, but he was a cab driver for a bunch of years. And people didn't even, you know, they didn't even know him.
Yeah.
And
it's sad.
So do you watch a lot of basketball now?
Not so much now. Not so much now, just because
you're not missing anything.
Yeah.
You're not missing anything. There's a lot of scoring, not a lot of defense. And look, you were in Chicago. What has Chicago ever been greater than the 90s? It was you. Oh. It was Oprah. It was the Bulls. It was like, was there ever a greater time to be, was there ever a better decade to be in a city than when you guys were just rushing, like Chicago was owning America in the 90s?
Well, various cities have had their moments, but clearly that was the Chicago era. I agree. But the truth is the Bulls made it.
Yeah.
The Bulls were everything. I mean, Michael Jordan was God, and it was just the whole town was just crazy about it. And luckily, I was lucky I had season's tickets, and it was just great. I mean, it became the thing you wanted to do. And even people that weren't crazy about basketball, it was just, you know, it was perfect. Yeah. And to win the championship year after year. And now, of course, Boston had it back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And in basketball, New York never had it. Well, we had I guess, two NBA championships. Yeah. But I remember the old time Knicks. We had Ray Felix as center, Harry Gallatin, Carl Braun, Kenny Sears, Willie Knowles.
See, that's way before our time, Jerry.
I know.
I consider myself a semi basketball historian, like not because I grew up loving the older part of the game, like the Dr. J's and knowing about the history, like Sweetwater Clifton and guys like that. But yeah, you just reeled off like five guys that I have no idea. I'm saying I feel bad. I was like, I got to go and refresh my history.
Yeah,
what I did yesterday.
Is that what you did, Channing? I hate those glasses, by the way, so much on you. And they're not prescription.
Poor Richard.
Let's dive into why Jerry doesn't watch a lot of basketball, because he is working and he's in Florida because they begin the show. Correct?
He wanted to be with his people.
Judge Jerry, season 3 got picked up.
Yes, but we do that in Connecticut.
I
live here, but I fly up there.
Okay, so your last time.
I fly up there on Sundays. And the way we do it is we tape every other week, because each week we tape, I do 35 cases.
Whoa.
The week that I don't tape, they send me the 35 cases so I can research it, because these people come from all different states in the union. So I have to apply the laws of the state that they're from to the case that they're bringing. It's a lot of, honestly, my work is on the off week when I have to research it.
And this is where I was like, wow, because I learned that you were a lawyer and then obviously a former mayor. And that's what they say when I was reading the bio. That's why you guys like to say that at the start of the show. So people understand that you love the law and you love learning about the cases. And so they are real cases, right?
Oh yeah, but that's true of all the court shows. they are real cases, and whatever decision I make, they can't then appeal it to a court of common pleas. You know, the decision is fine. The verdict is final. So I can mess around a little bit during the trial, making some jokes here and there. But when I make a decision, I have to be serious because it's affecting these people's lives. Admittedly, it's small claims, but if they're bringing the suit, they're really angry about something.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not going to become millionaires with this. It's, and they have no idea they're going to appear on television.
Wait, because, so how does that work?
Well, each producer is assigned two states in the union. And every morning the producer gets up, goes to his or her computer, and they look at every case that has been filed in their two states the day before in small claims. And if it's a interesting case, they call the plaintiff and they call the defendant and say, would you like to have your case adjudicated on national television with me as the judge? If they say yes, we fly him to Connecticut, then and there we go. So no one files a suit because, oh, I'm going to get on television. So when they file a suit, if you're filing in small claims, you know the person's angry. Otherwise, why do it?
Why go through all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. I did not know that was a process. It's like, hey, I'm going to take you to Jerry. That's not it is. Your producers are looking through cases. If there's something that pops up interesting, then you guys do it. But yeah, small claims court is... That's a very vindictive place to be when you're in small claims court. It's a very, I don't want to say petty is not the right word. It's a very vindictive.
But it's really personal. In other words, it's not a big corporation filing a suit because of a patent or something like that. This is because you wrecked my car. I let you borrow it and you know, and you're going to pay for the damages or, the, you know, you stole this from me or I loaned you money and now you're not paying me back. You know, you ghosted me, all this kind of stuff.
Oh, so, do you see some sad stuff? Look at Jerry talking about ghosts. Do you see some sad stuff? Like you see like mom trying to get like $800?
I am so hip. Is that what we say today? Hip?
Yes. The ghost, once you said ghost, it's great. Once you said ghost, it was great.
Yeah, but hip, the only thing hip about me is a replacement. That's what happens when you're my age.
Oh, Jerry,
I'm in Florida, so it doesn't lock up.
I want to be your intern, Jerry, so bad. I just want to come be an intern, but I'm not
Jerry,
good.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't want no parts of Richard.
Yeah. Jerry, what's the difference? How much do you love Judge Jerry versus the Jerry Springer show?
Well, the Judge Jerry is certainly more challenging. I mean, you know, I enjoy it because it's probably the only job I ever had that I was trained for.
You know, like you actually have to prepare for it.
Yeah. Well, every job I've ever had, except being mayor, obviously I had to run for that, but I never had to apply for a job. That's how lucky I've been because I was recruited out of law school to join the law firm. I went to work for Bobby Kennedy. That was my first job out of law school. And, but that obviously only lasted about 4 months because he was, you know, killed. And so I didn't apply for that. And then after I was mayor, NBC came during my last year as mayor and said, you know the city of Cincinnati, you've been the mayor and on council for 10 years. So how about anchoring our news? So then for 10 years, I was anchoring their news. Then NBC, that same company that owned the station that I did the news on, the NBC affiliate, they also owned Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael. Well, Phil Donahue was retiring. So they took me to lunch one day and said, we're starting another talk show. Phil's retiring and you're going to host it. So I was assigned to it as an employee and they adjusted my salary, et cetera, and stuff like that. But I didn't try out for it. I didn't audition. There was nothing like that. I was assigned. And then suddenly the show took off and then I got all these other opportunities in life. So I've lived a privileged, totally lucky life. I must have been really bad in the last life. In other words, I must have really suffered in the last life, or I'm going to pay in the next life. And I'm concerned because I burn real easy. Where I'm going, man, they don't have enough lotion to walk.
No. Oh, and what's so crazy is that, like, growing up, it was weird because it was Phil Donahue, which he had a fight. I think he had a pretty, what was it? Then there was Geraldo, there was Sally Jesse. I remember Richard Bay. Like there were like all of these like there were all of these like daytime talk shows. But then, and again, you showed up when Donahue retired. But when you showed up, everything that we had ever watched before was different. It was like once you showed, and it was funny. It was more entertainment. It was different. But I want to ask you this question, because you have been in political office, because you have been watching this, Bobby Kennedy, like you worked with Bobby Kennedy before he passed, like I want to say passed, before he was murdered and assassinated. But like we're not going to get into politics, but like, what do you think of the state? You've been watching the politics since the 60s. And now, you know, you ran for office in the late 80s.
I became mayor in 77. But I was elected to council in 71. So all through the 70s, I was in politics. In 82, I ran for governor of Ohio. Okay. I really had no chance. It was a close race, but I really didn't have a chance. I wasn't known outside of Cincinnati. I remember going up to Cleveland, which is at the northern tip of Ohio. Cincinnati is the southern tip. And I'm up in Cleveland and I gave a speech there and I said, if I'm elected, we're going to turn this state around. Then you'll be next to Kentucky. And did I get crap for that?
we actually had a guest send in a question, Dustin Sheets. He said, will you run for Ohio governor in 2022?
I am today announcing my candidacy for the office of
That was a good Kennedy right there. That was a good Kennedy.
Yeah. I'm too old. I mean, you know, the younger generation needs to be doing this. It's, you know, they're going to inherit the world now. And they, you know, there are a lot of talented people that, no, I'm not going to do that. But I loved it when I was doing it. I mean, it's still my passion. In other words, show business turned out to be the way I make a living. I thought it would be as a lawyer, but it turned out to be show business. It just happened. But I always knew my politics would be like religion. That's something I believe in. And I would never want to make a living doing something like that. If you have to make your living being in politics, then you are going to be at least intellectually dishonest. Because if putting food on the table for your family is dependent on you winning the next election, what won't you say? What won't you do? And I think that's what's so for so long is they start compromising their values. They start, you know, giving up on things they used that they got them into politics in the first place. So I always wanted my politics to be pure. I always knew that I would do this as a young man and then, you know, when I had a family, I would go out and make a living. As I said, I thought it would be as a lawyer, not in showbiz. But this is how it turned out. And I'm happy. It was a lot of fun.
A lot of people are happy, Jerry. A lot of people
A good guy.
Jerry, can we educate my guys on something? Because we do have a little connection. You know the state of Ohio just like I do. And Skyline Chili has its...
Oh, it's great.
Being in Cincinnati, Carson Merck wants to know your go-to order at Skyline.
Three-way.
That is a real thing on the menu, you guys.
What is that? Really is that like two types of cheese and onions and sour cream?
In fact, there was a case in Cincinnati. Three-way is when you have the spaghetti, the chili, and the cheese.
And the cheese.
Yeah, a four-way, I think they had onions, and the five-way is with beans or something like that. But a three-way, that's a three-way. Well, this guy gets picked up on a driving by late at night to pick up a hooker. And he says, how much is a three-way? And his defense in court was he thought he was ordering chili. He thought he was selling chili. Which
did
in Cincinnati,
did he work? Did it work?
No.
Sorry, Channing. Sorry, Channing. Yeah. You can't use that as a defense, Channing, next time. It won't work.
Just say, when you're asking for it, make sure there's a chili parlor close by, then it could work.
Then it can work? A three-way? Okay, so I got to try. So Skyline Chili is in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And now
WKRP.
You can get it in other places, but it's Southern.
I'll get it in other places because Cincinnatians live. For example, they have, you can get it in places in Florida.
Okay. Well, I'm headed to Florida. And
there are other places too. But most people who love chili, they think what we have in Cincinnati is absurd. I mean, it's all sweet. It's cinnamon. It's not hardcore chili, you know. So a guy from Texas would just laugh us out of the room if we talk about Cincinnati.
But Allie, so back up, Allie. Is it really good? Is it really good chili?
1,000%. The best thing about it is it's on the go.
Thank you, Allie.
It's on the go. It's quick. It has spaghetti. It has substance.
It has spaghetti and chili.
You have to get the three-way, and sometimes you get the little hot dogs on the side.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so basically, y'all just monopolized a struggle meal where it was like, what do we got? We got a little spaghetti, we got some ground beef, we got some hot dogs.
It's a good hangover meal. It's a good hangover meal.
Wow. Yeah.
You're in Cincinnati, okay. You've got to have a hangover.
All right, Cincinnati people, we need to know about this Skyline chili. We got to figure this out.
And there's Grater's ice cream.
Oh yeah.
Never had Grater's. What was the one in Cleveland that was big?
Mitchell's.
Yeah. Mitchell's was pretty good. Yeah. I think it was good because it was an Ohio thing, like a Cleveland, Ohio thing.
Good from Ohio?
I can think of a lot of things, but we're just going to, we're going to keep it here.
Okay, so. We have another one.
What's the next one?
Baller 24813. Have you guys ever had a Jerry Springer moment in your life out of a TV show type? So maybe this could be for Channing and Richard too. Do you guys ever have a Jerry Springer moment?
This is great.
Go.
This whole appearance of mine could be tax deductible because I could say I was recruiting guests.
Yes. This is. What was I didn't personally have a Jerry Springer moment, but I'm going to tell this story. I don't know if I should.
Of course, it's a friend of yours.
There was not me. Now I can't even tell this story. I can't. It was one of the ranch. It was one of the ranch story days. I can't tell this story.
You have to tell it, and then we'll edit it if we have to.
Okay. No, we're gonna. If we're gonna tell this story, we're definitely gonna edit it. So. I don't know, what's the most Jerry Springer, and I'm like, that is a Jerry Springer story. Okay, in the effort of Jerry Springer, so we used to have this house that we lived in San Diego, me and a bunch of my buddies, and it was a big house, and so the people had rooms, but there was one particular, like, we had like two rooms that like were like for guests. So one of my teammates came, he stayed in a room, he met this young lady. They had hooked up, whatever, nothing crazy. And the next night we were all out like hanging out again. And so his friend had come in town. So his friend had gone to pass out in that same room. So he had been texting this young lady that he had spent time with the night before and was like, yeah, just come, blah, blah, blah. So she gets there late at night.
See where this is going.
She gets here late at night. Now, mind you, the guy is like hanging out with some other girls, whatever, but his buddy had passed out in the bed. So this girl comes in and she like gets into bed thinking it's him. Now they did not have sex, but they started hooking up and they started doing things. And then she kind of like realized that it wasn't him. And he didn't know. He just thought like the guy that was there was kind of like, he felt like he was the innocent bystander here. Like he was being attacked. And so the next morning when it's all like figured out, the girls that like my buddy had like met that night and the girl that had like showed up the next day, they get into this huge fight at my house over the guy. And my boy is sitting here just not encouraging it, but he's kind of playing the Jerry Springer role where he's like, so what do you guys think? And just asking questions. And these girls are like arguing back and forth. And I'm sitting here like, oh my life is over. Like, what if this ever gets out? And now I'm telling it on a podcast. But that was probably the most Jerry Springer moment where that I was like,
that legitimately would have made the show.
What would you have said? What would have been your thoughts? The jokes you would have made.
Do we have the video? Roll the video.
roll the video. No video. And it was like you felt like, listen, you felt bad for the girl because you understand how the mistake made. It was a super, super dark room. She's coming over after a Friday night out or a Saturday night out.
Yeah,
you understand the mistake. And, you know, but it was like all of a sudden you're like, she realized it. And the guy then starts freaking out because then she realizes like what's going on and she's freaking out. So it's like everything is, it was,
I mean,
just
no one was the bad guy here.
No,
I mean, that's the thing. Yeah.
Yes, you see.
Channing, did you ever have a moment? Yeah, you did.
I mean, my story's not as bad. So it was like, okay, so there was this, one of our friends in college had a girlfriend who was not at that college, right? And they were both doing their own thing, but never told each other. So they were like, oh, this is my girlfriend. But both of them were kind of like seeing other people around. So like when she would come up, he would act like she was my girlfriend, whatever. And then when he would go down there to go visit her, she'd be like, yeah, this is my boyfriend. But they both had boyfriends and girlfriends on the other side. So one time, you know, us, we go hang out down in college, down at ASU, and we're out somewhere. And a girl sees my guy with another girl and comes over. And they're at the other table. So my friend, this girl he's talking to, which is his girlfriend from Tucson, is now at another table with the girl, with his girlfriend from ASU, with her boyfriend. And they look at each other and they go, and then literally,
that was
I was like, okay, don't make it weird. It's Saturday. We have a great day. They sat and chopped it up and it became nothing. And they were just like, well, I knew what was happening. They were like, I knew what was happening.
Oh,
and
so
they had some drinks and kept going.
That's a happy ending.
But I was like, hey, yo, we can't be. I said, listen, I said, hold on. You can't be acting crazy. And plus her boyfriend was a little bit bigger than him.
Yeah.
There's a story.
We're not in Tucson. I said, we're not in Tucson. I said, look, I'm not a fighter. I'm not a fighter. You see these hands? Yeah. They're soft. I'm not ready to
punter.
Take off for you.
Channing is a punter.
Yeah, I'm a punter. Yeah. I'm a punter. Don't hit me. I only have the crossbar, one bar from my helmet.
Yeah.
But I was shocked. They end up like, he was salty, but he chopped it up, you know, and he was like, you know.
It's easy to suck it up when the new guy is bigger than you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so upset, but. Nice to meet you. This guy sucks. You know?
That's not a bad joke. Allie, tell us your Jerry Springer.
I don't have a Jerry Springer moment.
The hoedowns in Van Wert. Tell us about like when somebody stole your sheep.
Somebody definitely tried to marry a sheep in Van Wert, Ohio.
For sure.
Jerry, remind them. The only three places people know of Ohio are?
Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Van Wert.
Thank you.
Is that a real thing?
No.
That's not a real thing. We lost Jerry. Jerry's out.
We lost him.
Oh, wait. How did that happen?
There he is.
Oh, you Jerry's know why? Back. I'm doing this on on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Someone called you?
And someone called me, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, they must have
heard. An hour, you are popular.
We won't take too much more of your time. I just want one more story that maybe we have never heard. No one's ever heard. One of your favorite stories from any time of any kind of work that you've done. Obviously, as we mentioned at the start of this, you're a man that wears many hats. You've got all the experiences. Something that we would love to hear, funny, hilarious, that we can end this episode with.
A story that, well, I'll tell, okay. I told you before that I was never allowed to know what the show was about. When I just held the card and the card had on it the names of the guests, but I never knew what their story was. So I start the show and there's a guy, a 45-year-old man or whatever, sitting on the chair on stage. And I go, let's say his name's Bob. Bob, welcome to the show. What's going on? And he says, well, I'm having trouble with the neighbors. What's the problem? They don't like my wife. Well, what's wrong with your wife? Nothing. She keeps to herself. She's quiet, whatever. Well, this is boring. So I look at the next name. Okay, well, let's meet your wife. Here's Pixel. And out comes this horse. Now, I'm thinking the crowd goes crazy, but I'm thinking that what any, I would think normal person would think, that poor Pixel fell off her horse, that she must have been backstage. She got on the horse and fell off. So I said, stop the cameras. Is she okay? And my producer is screaming at me, no, that's his wife. He had married his horse. He lived in Branson, Missouri, about 50 miles or 20 miles outside of Branson, Missouri. And we even went to his house with the cameras when they showed the clips then. The hallways inside his house were extra wide because the horse lived inside. Pixel lived inside the house with him.
I knew it was going to be an animal.
They had a marriage, yeah. And on stage, when Bob was sitting in the chair, Pixel was to my left. And whenever I stood in between them, in their line of sight, Pixel would nudge me out of the way. It was really weird. Pixel had to keep his eyes on Bob. Well, we did a follow-up show because Pixel left.
Yeah, that needs a follow-up. That definitely needs a follow-up show.
Well, we did. Pixel left him.
Okay. All right.
That's what happens when you leave the door open. Yeah.
He couldn't compete with the past men that picked the other horses that Pixel had dated.
Whoa. Yeah.
But I had
Richard.
I missed it. What did he say?
I had to. I had. Okay. That's enough.
Did Jerry hear it?
Yeah.
I feel like Jerry didn't hear it.
No, Jerry.
Well, I said that the guests couldn't compete with the past horses that Pixel had dated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Pixel said something about he was hung like a man. I don't know what that meant.
Oh! And on that note, is what Jerry's
figured. We're out.
One.
Jerry,
you have been incredible. Jerry,
this is great.
This has been a highlight. We've done hundreds of episodes, and this has been one of the greatest highlights of all time. This is so awesome.
You're such a nice guy. Thank you, guys. No kidding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Hey, Road Trippin' fam. We are excited to let you know that Road Trippin' is proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played NBA Daily Fantasy on FanDuel before? Well, check this out. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Why should you play on FanDuel NBA? Well, for one, it is easy to use when it comes to their app. What's not to love about that? But also, for example, they offer different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level. Oh yeah, and get this. You can play for big prizes, single game contests for the biggest national matches, and enter contests for as low as 5 cents. That's right. 5 cents. Simply incredible. So again, let's recap. Right now, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with a 20% deposit match. Enter URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin to play now and get your deposit bonus. That's URL FanDuel.com/roadtrippin so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win.